This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
For the Bang. You're listening to Pacifica Headline News with Sidrek Franklin and Leanne Caldwell. I'm Verna Avery Brown.
And for those of you wanting information about the previous program, the Global Medicine Review, Dr. Pearl's information is 888-374-2732, and the website is thereconnection.com. It's 1 o'clock in New York City. You're tuned to WBAI, WBAI.org, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. Coming up next, The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti.
Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille.
And this is Roberta Maria Atti.
With you at the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Always finding something interesting to think about. And Roberta and I have been doing some work on studying different religions and the different sacraments that they go through, and it led us to today's discussion, which has almost nothing to do with any of it, except we talk about the beginning, baptism. And the one area that we talk about that we don't see much information about is the following. What's your name? Yes, my friends, what's your name? As they say in Italian, come si chiama? Is that the way you say it in Italian?
Come ti chiami?
Well, we used to say
come si chiama if you're addressing someone you look up to.
I guess as a kid, that's why I was taught that way.
Mm-hmm.
Come si chiama? How do you say it in French?
Comment vous appelez-vous?
Portuguese.
Or comment est-ce que tu t'appelles? Portuguese, I'm going to pass on that for now. I'll have to brush up my memory. Spanish,
como
se llama? Como te llamas tú? Or como se llama usted?
It's a big deal, you know, your name. Your name is a bigger deal than you imagine. And in fact, we are going to talk to you today about how we believe that your name had a major effect. What you were given as a name is part of your psychology. I wonder how many sessions I must have spent with patients talking just about the origin of their name and what it means to them. Do you like your name? Do you like your name? I mean, it's a real question. Do you like the name you were born with?
Do you know, Armand, that there are some cultures where the name must be kept hidden from strangers, from anyone outside the tribe? Because it is believed that if someone knows your name, they can use it. They can use that information against you. So your name must be kept within a circle of friends and never be known by anybody who could be an enemy.
Well, in a recent article in the St. Petersburg Times, yes, don't look at me like that. I read the St. Petersburg Times.
Mm.
Tampa Bay's every day.
Mm-hmm.
One of the articles brought at this point that a frequently asked question nowadays is, if you ask somebody, what are you going to name your child, frequently they tell you, mind your own business. They tell you they don't want to tell you, and according to this article, it said that people are shying away from revealing the names because people are coming up with more and more creative names. And they don't like the influence of people telling them that that's a bad choice for a name.
And also, Armand, there are some traditions whereby in families, for instance, you know, it is assumed that your child is going to be named after a grandparent, for instance. And if one should decide to break that tradition, one might be afraid that, you know, the criticism will just be relentless.
If you choose a unique name, which nowadays people tend to do a little more, you know, Although it's not that unusual to be named after something else. I mean, like a name like Surpell, S-U-R-P-E-L-L.
Surpell?
Do you remember we had someone who used to work here many years ago whose name was Corintha? And I asked Corintha, you don't remember Corintha, maybe no. It was way before your time.
I think so.
It might have been in the early 1900s. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Corintha worked here, and I remember Corintha, and I one day sat with her, and I said, Corintha, why is your name Corintha? Why did you get that name? And she said, oh, my family liked how it sounded. I said, okay. I said, what's your sister's name? Get ready for this. She said, Placintha.
Oh, no.
Yes,
no way.
Yes, P-L-A-C-I-N-T-H-A-I-N, not Placintha, Placintha.
Wow.
And I said, well, where did your sister get that name? And she said, well, my father was in the, when my child mother
was
delivered
birth.
The birth, the name just popped into my father's head.
Oh, no.
Oh. And oh, no. It stuck.
No, I...
Oh, yes.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yes, oh, yes.
You know what, Armand? Actually, you have an interesting name, Armand. It's not too common. Actually, it's quite rare, I think, in the U.S. anyway. In Italy, I had a couple of uncles named Armando. But so what was it like for you to grow up with that name, Armand?
Well, Armand is a very interesting name because it is really unusual. You know, it's in the registry of names, which you can look up. When a name appears 1 out of 100 times, it gets significance. At the tiniest level, the name Armand only appeared 1 out of 100 times in 1905. For some reason, there was a whole flurry of people, like 8 of them, who wanted to name themselves Armand or have somebody name them. Wouldn't it be nice to choose your name before you're born? And anyway, so I happened to get the name from my father, who had the name Armand. Okay, now people's familiarity with the spelling A-R-M-A-N-D, the only association they had was to Armand Hammer. So they would pronounce Armand, like it was A-R-M-E-N-D. So I had to keep reminding them it was Armand, because that's the way we
but
were
your
born
father,
with it from the French side.
Your father was born in Europe, right?
Right.
Right. See, in Europe, Armand or Armando...
Don't say the two together. It feels like almost an insult.
Why?
Well, it's this whole thing about mispronunciation or adding a word to a name, you know, adding something to the name. Mm-hmm. The name is Armand. It's not Armando.
Mm-hmm.
Armando
well, I was
is a
saying,
different thing.
I wonder if your father was named Armando, though.
No.
He was named Armand.
Yeah. Mm. But this thing happened, you know, throughout childhood. I'm stuck with this name. And where am I growing up? But on the Lower East Side of Manhattan during the gang war era. And I liked my name.
Sure, that must have made you sound like you were tough. Because, I mean, Armand sounds like a soldier. Like
no, they kind of thought of it as being a weak name. You know, they said Armand. They would say Armand Joy. They'd make fun of me a lot.
Really?
But I was a big guy, so I would defend my name. Mm. Early on, I would just say, well, that's my name. But for some reason, I stuck with it. Except when we got to this period of life where we all joined the gangs. And in the gangs, which is very much like West Side Story without the music, in the gangs, everybody had a nickname. Everyone had a nickname. And my nickname, gee, do you think you could guess it? I didn't keep Armand. They had a nickname for me that lasted a full year and a half. When I would walk around and everybody called me by that name, and maybe at the end of the program, I'll tell you what it is. Mm. A few listeners know, you know.
I think you have said it before, yes.
But, you know, it's such an interesting thing, Roberta, because having a name kind of determines a lot of things.
Well, sure, because the...
Actually, you know, my father had the same name that I did. And in the house, if they called... If my mother said, Armand...
Both of you would go.
Both of us would perk. Mm-hmm. So they changed my name. When I was a kid, I was called Brother. Mm-hmm. Before the word brother was hip, you know, I was Brother. I was actually Bro when I was a kid. No, this is when I was real little.
And to distinguish you from your father.
To distinguish me from Armand. So I was Bro. I was Brother to my sisters and to my mother. And so they would call me Brother, and they would call my father Dad.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the name Armand didn't exist in the house.
Right. Well, you know, you're saying it has a great deal of significance, of course, because as we grow up, our name becomes so much part of our identity that when we hear someone mispronounce it, it's more than just mispronouncing a word. It almost feels like they don't respect us enough to pronounce it the right way. You know how sensitive people can be when you mispronounce their names? You know, like one would feel, well, if I'm important enough to you, you would make the effort of making sure that you pronounce my name the way it's meant to be pronounced.
You know, it's really interesting because I was speaking to Jana, who works here. That
Jana, by the way, would be
G-I-A-N-M-A.
Right, Jana. Huh? Mm-hmm.
But she's not Jana.
Jana.
But that's not what she is.
But you see, that's the name that it comes from, though. Jana.
I know,
now here it's Jana. But
now I wonder if Jana would consider it an insult for you to give her Italian name when her real name is Jana.
Well, that's why I call her Jana. But
you still call me Armando?
No, I call you Armand, but I'm just saying in my language, that's how it would be pronounced.
Yes, okay. But mispronouncing somebody's name has a lot of meaning.
Right.
Because to say it, like Roberta, you're Roberta, and I have heard people call you Roberta.
And you know, Armand, if I really expected people to pronounce it the right way, it would be impossible. So I've given up. Because really, the way to pronounce it, if you want me to pronounce your name Armand, then you should pronounce my name Roberta. That's the correct pronunciation.
Roberta.
Give it a try, right. It's
Roberta.
Almost impossible for a native English speaker to roll the R's like that twice in the same word, so I don't expect it anymore, and I just go with the Roberta. But, you know, it really, at first, it sounded horrible.
Well, imagine if you're in another country. You've got to give the option to somebody. But, you know, as we look back on the history of words, this year alone, more than 120 million babies will be born on Earth. Get that? 120 million babies, and they all need a name. In fact, you have to give them a name or they don't have an identity. If you don't give them a name, they won't be allowed into things. You can't say, I don't have a name yet. You know, and get a license. You can't get a Social Security card. You are not allowed to exist without a name.
Well, in fact, that's what you do to a prison inmate. You take away their names and give them a number instead, which is to some extent what is done to people in hospitals, too, in medical settings. You take away the name, you give a number or a diagnosis, and look at what that... Look at the effect it has on the person. It does something to their identity.
It's as if to say to the person who's committed a crime that we are taking away your name because you've lost the right to have it.
Right.
And so we give you a number.
You're no longer a full individual. You're less than that, so we give you a number instead of a name. You know that some anthropologists... years ago, when they would visit with some hunter-gatherers, and so that the people that they would visit with would not reveal their names for the reason I said before, to protect it from the possibility of an enemy knowing it. So these anthropologists would think that naming people was something only done in the more, let's say, literate, advanced cultures. It turns out that every single culture on Earth, every group of humans, names the individuals in the group, and that's done because to differentiate everyone from everyone else, to give every person their own unique identity. So everyone, every human has a name.
Well, in the pre-literate societies, there is a tendency to be very strict about the rules of names.
Right.
They don't have the kind of looseness that we have. There is no Placenta running around.
Mm-mm.
They name people after other people is one. or totems.
Yeah, they name, there are set rules because a name is so important. It is believed to have so much bearing in the way the life of that individual is going to unfold, that it is very carefully either selected or discovered. Here's an interesting one. Some cultures, I believe, like the people, the Khazi people in Africa, believe that a name has to be discovered by when the baby is born, a relative of the mother, an elder, comes in and recites a list of names while dropping drops of a rice liquor onto a rice meal. And the drop that takes the longest to fall, at that moment, the name that is being recited at that moment is the name that is then given to the baby. So in that sense, that name is discovered, not selected.
And a lot of names are chosen like that, you know, as if there's going to be a God intervention that's going to tell you what the name should be. You know, Roberta, you can't go into a church if you don't have a name.
Right.
If you're,
well,
if
a Catholic church.
A Catholic church. You can't go into a Catholic church if you don't have a name. Like the Catholic Church says, I don't think they prevent people who are not Catholic going in.
Not anymore.
Not
but
anymore.
It
they
used
to.
Be.
Mm-hmm. But if you don't, if you're a Catholic and you don't have a name, you're not allowed in the church. Which means that the baby, a baby who is born, is not allowed into the church. They are brought into the sacristy, which is around the side, which is where they generally will do, or in the very, very back of the church. I've seen some baptisms done.
There is an area that is specific for baptisms, and it has a big bowl of sacred water, and that's where you bring the baby, because the belief in original sin is such that until you receive your name and the baptism with that name, you are contaminated by this original sin business. And so when you get your name along with the baptism of water, that automatically erases the original sin away from you, washes it off of you. And so from that moment on, you're a part of that group, a part of that neighborhood, a part of that society.
And
that
your
you're
soul
born into.
Enters.
Right.
When you take your name, your soul enters, according to the Catholic religion, or according to what we read about the Catholic religion, and your soul enters, and now you're a pure soul. At baptism, you're a pure soul, and your name represents the pure soul. In fact, the priest will ask, what is your first name? Or what is your name? What name do you give this child?
That's the first thing that they will ask you, yes.
And then they give you anointings with water and then oils, different kinds of oils, you know, to touch, you know.
Yeah, but
if
you...
A little olive oil, a little peanut oil.
No, I don't think olive oil. I think just water. The oil is later on in life.
Do the oils at baptism?
I think...
what I read.
Well, but anyway, you know, if you think about the Catholic religion, the fact that in the Bible, the first sentence is, in the beginning was the Word. Well, the Word, meaning that anything you say, that speech, is creative. When you say something, you are creating a reality of sorts. And so when you speak a name, you know, you set something in motion. And so the name is very important, because by hearing it, by hearing people calling you by your name, something is being reinforced over and over and over again, to the point where you then identify with that sound and it has an effect on you.
You know, there it is, Michael. I've noticed with couples who have counseled with me, couples who come in for therapy, Roberta, they don't use each other's name anymore. They don't actually say the proper name of the person. So he won't say Mary when he's talking to her, and she won't say John. And when they're talking to me, they'll talk about she or her, but they do not give them the name identity. And one of the things that tell me how separate and alienated people are from each other is how frequently they will use the other person's name. Imagine making love to someone and never saying their name. It's a big difference when you're making love with someone and you say baby, but then you also say their name, you know, oh, Grunhilde, you know, I'm yours. If you say the name, it has a whole different meaning.
Yes,
you move out
calling
of your own world, mm-hmm, and you're moving into the world of the other people. Let me recommend to all you lovers out there that go use your mate's name to their face. Say their name and say it softly and watch them melt.
Well, you're calling their soul to you when you speak their name in a way that is, you know, filled with desire, I guess. You say that name in a way that you call their soul. You call their whole being by calling that name, sure.
Who gave you your name? There's a question I ask all of you. Why did they choose that name? Who did they name you after? They name you after a dead grandmother? You know, in certain religions, the daughter, is it an Italian? What did Jana tell us? The oldest son is named after
the father's father.
Mm-hmm.
And the daughter after the father's mother.
And the oldest daughter is named after the father's mother. That's quite a load to carry,
mm-hmm,
right? You got to be, you know, you're named after grandma. And now, I guess there's a double reason for it, because if you're named after your grandparents are going to take care of you more because you're what they call your namesake.
Right.
See, when you become someone's namesake, they protect you. Just as in Catholicism, there's a thing called the godfather or the godparents. And according to the Catholic tradition, the role of the godparents is they were going to protect you. And now here's the interesting secret. Not if you run out of luck, not if you're down on your money, but if you fall away from your religion, these people will help bring you back to Catholicism. That's the original meaning of the godfather, which is nothing that we saw when we think of the mafia movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Godfather. He's going to bring you back to the Catholic Church. Nah.
Yeah, it changed its meaning
sure, a little bit.
Sure.
How did you like your name when you grew up? How did you like it? How did you deal with it? So for me, as I was saying, Roberta, I always had to defend it. But it kind of built my muscle, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all right. You know, I'd go back and it would almost be like there wasn't a choice. You can't take my name away from me, maybe because I had so little that I could really identify with. What about your name? Did you have trouble with Roberta?
I did. I didn't like it at first.
Why not?
Because
it's boyish.
Yeah, it sounded like it was a boy's name to me, and I would have preferred a more feminine name.
That's why you pick Roberta Maria. To bring your feminine to yourself.
Well, Maria is my second name, but, you know, not everyone in Italy chooses to include their second name when they introduce themselves. And I do because, yes, I like to add that Maria because that's unequivocally a feminine name.
So it brings you away from that identity which you had, which is like...
My identity is that I stole my brother's place in life, you know.
Wow.
He should have been here, not me.
Wow. If
sure,
you think about the masculinized names, the feminized masculine names.
Well,
that's
yeah. I was supposed to be a boy. I mean, I was wanted as a boy, and everybody would tell my mother, oh, that's for sure that's going to be a boy. I don't know how they could say that. They didn't have ultrasound back then, but everyone would tell her, this is going to be a boy. And when it turned out that it wasn't a boy, they named me with the name they would have given the boy. And, you know, Roberta is more often used for boys than for girls. Roberto.
As in Robert, Roberto.
In Italy, anyway.
Well, you think about, you know, do people really give that any consideration? That a feminized masculine name, and it's always true, whenever I meet anybody with a feminized masculine name, they are distinctly masculine characteristics about them. I see it so often when somebody comes in. The most popular name in America for the last 4 years. Can you imagine what it is for women? The last 4 years, the most popular name is Madison.
Unbelievable.
All the babies are being named Madison. Not all the babies, but the most popular name, Madison. Madison. What a funny name. I think it's because Madison is a strong, yet they think, feminine name.
I wonder.
Because they have Madison Avenue, Madison Avenue.
I was going to say, I wonder if Lexington will ever be a name, you know, for girls. Hey, Lex.
Well, anyway, Madison is now the name. Whenever I heard a name that somebody was trying to choose, I always wondered, how would the other children joke with you about it? Like, if your name was Lexington, they'd call you, you know, how's your Lex life? You know, they mm-hmm. would kind of make fun of it. They made fun of my name. It's how do they make fun of your name? And if you think, well, I'm going to give a child a name and I don't care how kids make fun of it, you're really very egocentric, because if you give a child a name that's very difficult, like I knew, well, I guess Placenta wasn't very easy, was it? But I knew a kid whose name was Stoll.
Stoll?
Yeah,
never
Stoll.
Heard of it.
I know, but you can imagine what the kids did with that one. You know, they called him Stool.
Sure.
And it was like, oh, my gosh. And he would just have to, you know, he'd go home crying with that name.
Yeah, that's really cruel. I think that when a parent does that, I mean, maybe, yeah, they're not thinking at all. And, you know, another thing that not everyone seems to be aware of is that when you give a child the name of a previous baby who has died, a child who has died. Let's say that, you know, you have a child and the child dies, and then you have another kid and you name that child after the one that died. That's a difficult name to bear because, you know, forever after, that child has to feel
there's a ghost.
Yeah, exactly.
You're living a ghost.
Right.
And in fact, it's called the ghost child. The child that died is called the ghost child, and you're the reminder of it.
Mm-hmm.
Over and over again.
And you are reminded that you are alive and they aren't, and therefore there's also, you know, like the survivor syndrome sort of thing that happens to people who carry those names. My mother, actually, that was done to her because her older sister had just died at 16, and so my mother was born a year after her older sister died, and so she was named, you know, after that sister. So that was a difficult legacy.
What was that name?
Maria.
Maria.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. And you've got that name.
Well, but that's my second name.
Hmm. The most popular names for young women or for children, girls, is Emma, Abigail, Riley, Bailey, Chloe, Isabella. Isabella is such an interesting name to have become one of the most popular names. You know, I'm sure it's because of Rossellini, you know, that the name Isabella becomes popular. But it's such a beautiful name. And back when I was a child, it was a name that everybody hated if they were given it.
Why would they hate it?
Because it had the word bell in it.
And
they'd say ding dong. They would make fun of you for having a bell in your name.
Mm.
You know, so it was a name that people didn't like. Hannah is one. Haley is another. Ava, however, A-V-A, is still one of the most popular names given to children. Isn't that beautiful? Do you
yes,
think that that's
I
a...
I think
how
it's
does something so simple wind up still there? It kind of has always been at the top of the list.
Mm-hmm.
Olivia is a new popular name. Alexis, Mackenzie is now being given to women. Cadence, Taylor, Grace, Paige, Emily, Alaya, and Adriana, the name Emily. When children scream the word Emily, it just is perfect.
Why?
It screams like no other name does. Emily! It's mm-hmm. just, it's just,
mm-hmm.
it's just one of those hmm. things that'll go through you.
You know, there are some doctors and psychologists in Europe lately who are doing a lot of work to research how the name affects a person's health, believe it or not. There's a lot of work being done and books being written about that, about what the name means, why your parent gave it to you. There's a whole area of study and research in the unconscious motives behind the choice and what it does to you health-wise, and I think that that's fascinating. My sister went to a whole weekend workshop about that.
You know, we're going to have to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to be taking your calls about your experience with your name. On the break, I am taking a full 4.5 minutes, and I'm going to play music for you, which is the very first classical music I ever heard in my life. I was a jazz buff, and somebody brought me and put headphones on me and said, listen, you want to... I know you love jazz, but I'd like you to hear classical music. And he turned me off to Shostakovich's Fifth Symphony, and I brought it for you to hear. It is such changed my life. I'll be back.
Hi, I'm Danny Glover, and this is WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
Tahrir, Liberation. Marhaba, I'm Barbara Nimri Aziz. Tahrir is a long WBAI tradition and still strong in voices of the Arab Muslim community here and abroad. I invite you to tune in Tuesday evenings at 7 for discussions on Islam and society, justice and injustice, in-depth interviews with writers from across the world, and Fen Majnoon, Crazy Arts, with Dean and Maysoon.
All right, friends. Let yourself lay back and get this one. It's fabulous. Headphones, very appropriate. Shostakovich, Fifth Symphony, played by Leonard Bernstein in the New York Philharmonic. So that was it. I mean, you know, here I am. I was, 16, and I mean jazz buff. I was playing jazz. I was a drummer. And so he brings me to a studio, some kind of a library, and they had this on a flat disc. I remember it was a disc, a 33 RPM disc record. And he put it on and had headphones on, and he said, listen to this. And I was crying. I mean, my tears rolling out of my eyes as I'm listening to this incredible harmony, this wonderful work. And it just turned me around. Started me partially on my road of loving all kinds of musics. Armand DeMille here with Roberta Maria Atti. We're with you today, fooling around a little bit. But, you know, we're trying to give you this week as much time as possible speaking to you about your own name and the meaning of your name. Freud saw a lot of, you know, Roberta, Freud saw a lot of meaning in the accidental distortion of a person's name. Like when people say my name and they say it wrong over and over again. Or people say your name and say it wrong over and over and over again. And if there's not something built into it, like if you said Smith and you said Smythe instead of Smith, or...
Well, that sounds like a passive-aggressive move. Like if you keep repeating the name of a person, pronouncing it wrong, obviously you're doing something that to annoy them. I mean, especially if they ask you, please... don't pronounce my name like that. Pronounce it like this. If you continue, I've had that happen to me actually. And well, Jung, Carl Jung, that is, he saw the whole mythology aspect because of the collective unconscious business that he was interested in. So, what he went into was the fact that when we name someone with a name that has to do with a certain myth, part of mythology, that myth is going to influence that person's life, most likely.
And Freud, when seeing the mispronunciation of people's names, he said that it was one of the things that the aristocrats do is they maintain their number, they maintain their position, and it seemed that aristocratic people, meaning people in the higher echelons, seemed to mispronounce their doctors' names more often than other people did. So it's almost like you're talking down to your doctor by mispronouncing their names. And he interpreted this as that the aristocracy had of keeping physicians in their place. Because physicians, even though they may have money and they may have wealth and they may have success, were not welcomed into the aristocracy. They weren't, you know, you're still a working man.
So you're taking away a person's power because you're taking away their identity.
You pronounce their name wrong.
If you pronounce their name wrong, right.
And, you know, it is very common. A lot of people forget names. And this is one I want to address very specifically. You could forget a name, and you could forget it again and again and again, and it is not necessarily a sign of disrespect. Memory is very funny around names. There are some people who remember names, some people who just can't remember a name. Some people remember faces and they can't remember the name. Some people remember numbers and can't remember names. And some people remember names, but they always forget numbers. Like, you know, you ask most people their cell phone number nowadays, and they almost don't know it. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you never dial it. But if you're somebody who forgets names, give yourself a gift. Say to the people you're talking to, I forget names. Would you please tell me your name again? Now, you may think this makes you look bad, but it doesn't make you look bad. It makes you look good. It makes you look as if the person says, oh, you really care. So over and over again, if you've forgotten someone's name, make it real simple. Say, I forget names. Could you please tell me your name again? And even though that feels very difficult to do, it's really a gift to the other person. Mm-hmm. The other way to do it is to have a friend And if you don't remember, you know, and I'm sure many of you do this. Let's say you walk over and somebody comes over and greets you. You know, let's say, Roberta, that somebody comes over and greets you and you forget their name. I, as your friend, will address them and say, "Hi, I'm Armand DeMille. I didn't get your name."
Mm-hmm.
See, so bailing you out of forgetting their name.
Right.
Of course, I think the better way is to just go directly for it and remind them, this is Armand DeMille with you. We are going to take a couple of calls today about this because there's been trauma related to names.
Yes, there is, and that's because, as we were saying, our identity is so tied in with our name, and, you know, depending on what the person who named us had in mind, or depending on what they were feeling or thinking at the time when they did name us, a lot of things could have been handed over to us, unresolved things that may bring us to a challenge that with a different name we may not have had. This is what I believe anyway, that it does go that far.
Well, the more preliterate the society, though, the fewer the names had choices, you know. There were fewer discretions used in giving people's names. So when you ask somebody, by what rule did you follow to give your child that name, they would generally be able to tell you, well, we named him after the first grandfather of the second cousin, you know, who lived on the hill. You know, or we named him after the hill.
Right. So that kind of makes it easier to name someone, and also it doesn't bring into the picture all this other stuff that otherwise could come into the picture. If, let's say, you know, just to give you an example on this research that I was mentioning before, if in the name Nicholas or Nicoletta or Nicole, there is an implication that the person who named that baby had concerns for the nest, believe it or not. This is psychologists in France are doing this kind of research. And concern for the nest. So Nicholas, Nicoletta is an individual who is given the responsibility to protect the nest. Now, I know that it sounds far-fetched and it sounds like maybe a little too far-fetched, but I think it's interesting to think of what was my intention when I named my daughter Nicoletta? What did I mean to do by choosing that name?
Is there a collective unconscious guiding you in that place to direct that name? The boys' names, by the way, the popular ones are Ethan, Caleb, C-A-L-E-B. Dylan has become very popular. Jacob, Connor, Logan, Hayden, Jordan, Ryan, Cameron. Andrew sticks in there. Joe and John are gone. Bruce is out the window. No more Bruces. No more Mikes. You know, getting rid of Michael. So we've got Addison, Joshua, Noam. You know what I like, Roberta? I like the totem names. I like names. Like the other day, I got some New England corn. You know, the East Island or the Long Island corn is just
the sweetest
fantastic.
Thing, yes.
Right? And the bicolored corn is the very
sweetest
best.
Thing in the world, yes.
It's wonderful. So I got some corn and I was shucking it. Now, I was shucking corn.
I would like some of that. The next time you get some,
I'll bring it to you.
I love that corn.
I was shucking corn. Now, shucking corn, you know what that means,
yeah,
right? Pulling off the husk. And I was noticing it had a lot of hairs on this corn. So I was really,
it's called silk, by the way.
I was taken off the silk.
Mm.
And I was doing it with such a ritual that I said to myself, you know, if I was a Native American, I would be called He Who Shucks Corn.
Uh-huh.
You know, or He Who Shucks Kilt. I love those names.
Yes, I do too.
You know, I love the Native American names given to people because, you know, He Who Wears Red Bandanas would determine what I would be like.
Yes, I would be the highest flying hawk.
She who flies like hawk.
Yes, she who flies like eagle or like hawk. Yes, that would be my name.
We need some names around here, creative names.
That would be nice, actually. What name would you choose for yourself? That's a question.
I don't know if this is insulting Native American civilization by saying this.
Why? I mean, this is
very
poetic.
I don't want to make fun of it.
No, I would love to call my daughter, you know, She Who Flies Higher Than the Eagles. I think that's beautiful.
He Who Does Radio. 212-209-2900. What did you? How did you get along with your name? Was there a trauma about it? A lot of people hated their name growing up. How do you feel about correcting people when they mispronounce your name? This is another thing about your personality. If you've got a name that gets mispronounced and you correct people, it means that you've developed a certain strength in your personality. If you let people mispronounce your name, it means that you've gotten buried, you know, to a point where you just don't fight anymore and you're probably depressed. If someone has a name that's constantly mispronounced and they don't correct the people, it means that they're depressed.
Sure. Because well, it means that they, you know, their identity, their sense of self may not be as strong as someone who does protect their name.
What would you prefer your name to be? 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
My name is Gloria.
Hello, Gloria.
The funny thing is, my mother's name is Gloria, my grandmother's name is Gloria, so I guess I didn't have a choice when I was growing up to dislike or like my name. And people find it very strange, because my mother and I have exactly the same name, the same first name and the same last name, and people found it very strange.
How, that your family had the same name?
No, that a woman would name her daughter and her granddaughter after herself, because men do it all the time, but when a woman does it, people are so taken aback.
And how did you feel about it?
I felt like I never had an identity. I still feel like I still don't.
You still don't have an identity.
Yeah, because people see my name and they're, like, even for instance, like when I went to vote, they would always throw my card away because they would see my mother's name and say, oh, it's got to be a misprint.
I get that with my father's name every now and then.
Right. And
you know,
then
I'd go to a bank and they'd think I was him or
Right, so they would think it was just one person opposed to being two completely different people. Mm. And then also, I gave my son the name Benjamin, which is after my grandfather. And when people hear it, they're kind of taken back at first. When they're like, what's his name? And I go, Benjamin. You see that, like, a hesitation. And then go, oh, okay, that's nice.
Well, that's another thing. People do tend to have judgments about people's names. You know, about what they think you should have named the child. But, Gloria, if you had a different name, what would it be? What would you like?
I'd like Morgan.
You'd like to be called Morgan?
Yes.
That's a pretty name.
I like to be called Morgan.
And what's your image of Morgan? Do you see a pirate?
Strong, resilient. Yeah, and I feel like with my name, I guess since I've always been the second or the third, I just don't get it. Just doesn't have much impact.
You'd be Morgan the first.
Yes,
let
I have my own identity.
And you would choose Morgan. You would not choose Morgana. You would not choose a feminized version of it. You'd choose a male.
A male version. Like, I guess if I had a daughter, her name would be Morgan Mitchell.
Gotcha. Well, just one question. Why don't you change your name?
Why don't I change my name? Because I guess my mother and my grandmother would be really upset.
I understand. I understand. So if they should ever pass on,
yeah,
are they still around?
Yes, they both are.
I got you. So you're kind of waiting to
I'm kind of waiting them out.
Well, now we have your Native American name.
Okay.
She waiting for parents to die.
Yes.
Thanks for calling in, Gloria.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
212-209. Waiting to change her name.
Well, she could always add it up like I did. Gloria Morgan.
Well, you see, the family is going to respond. They're kind of getting off on this namesake idea. And if you change it at all.
And you see, that's like saying, here, I'm going to give you this name so that whatever I didn't do right, I'm expecting you to fix. You know, I'm expecting you to carry on so that my mistakes and what I screwed up is going to be taken care of. That's kind of the message in that.
You know, one other part related to that, Roberta. When we do work, intense feeling work with clients, so let's say someone's depressed and we take them through this process of therapy called the intense feeling psychotherapy, and they get into a really intense place where they discover, instead of their depression, they discover their rage and they finally let it out and they are standing tall for the very first time. The thing I'll always ask them to do is say their name. And they'll say their name, and I have them say their name as loudly and as strongly as they could say it, not screaming from the throat, but having the sound come from the abdomen. from the diaphragm, you know? And you should hear when someone says the name Michael and says it for the first time, or Morgana, or when they say their name for the first time, they hear it for the first time as if it's their name, not belonging to anybody else. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille here with Roberta Maria Atti. I will definitely be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. to continue, but let's just take this a step further. Hi there, you're on the air. Hello there.
Somebody else.
I got you.
From across the street.
From across the street.
From across the street. I wonder what his name was.
Hello?
Hello there.
Hi, Armand.
Yes, you've got us.
Oh, hi, how are you?
Good.
This is Deborah.
Hello, Deborah.
This is my first time calling in, but I know you personally. I've seen you in session before. And I love this topic because I'm 8 months pregnant, and my husband and I are... We're going through the name game.
You know, the name book is kind of sinful. You must have bought that book with 1,000 names in it, and it tells you what each name means.
Yes.
Yeah, it's kind of prejudicial, you know. I don't agree with all the meanings on all the names as I've seen them. But here's a story I want to say. Nobody ever names their child Armand, and if they do, I promise that child will wind up on the radio someday.
Well, I certainly will put that out there.
Put that out there somewhere in the world. How did you like the name Deborah growing up?
I loved the name Deborah. Yeah. And my mother said that even when I was 5 years old, a lot of people, when they hear the name Deborah, they automatically go to Debbie. And my mother said that I was quite cocky as a five-year-old, saying, my name is not Debbie, it's Deborah.
Is it the O-R-R-A-H?
No,
Deborah
D-E-B-R-A.
Or the D-E-B-R-A, Deborah.
Yeah.
And so you would pronounce, you would keep your name and you'd fight for your name. This is who I am.
Yes.
It's a deeply romantic name. You know, I think Deborah's one of the great ones.
Yeah. I think I'm named after my great-grandmother.
And you say you've always liked your name.
Yeah.
And now
yeah.
You and your husband are trying to pick a name for whoever's coming up next.
Exactly.
And you notice how people try to influence you, like some people try to invite you know, tell you that they'll get him on the radio if you give him the right name. So do you notice how people try to influence your choice?
Absolutely. Well, we don't know if we're having a boy or a girl. And I had a cousin who was very close to me and my family, and his name was Wayne. And I was brought up.
Wayne is dead?
Yes.
You got to watch out when naming kids after dead people. That's what Roberta was saying a little while ago.
Right. Well, I was brought up Jewish, and in the Jewish religion, you can take the first letter of the name, and it's sort of like a tribute.
Oh, I see. All right.
So I've asked my husband if we could do something with a W, and he's having a very hard time with it, so I don't know exactly how we're going to work through it.
Well, it's kind of interesting because he doesn't like the W in the middle, possibly because of our current president.
Probably.
That's a tough letter nowadays.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but very interesting, you know, an interesting letter that's not so common.
And an interesting way for the two of you to find a way into your own hearts with each other. You know, you've got to use his name. Use your husband's name as often as possible. And because he must be a little scared about losing you to your child. And I would suspect that that's happening. And that makes picking something like a name even more difficult.
And Deborah, one other thing I am thinking about as I'm listening to you and Armand. If you do decide on a name, you know, it's a wonderful idea to start to call your child while he or she is still in the womb. Because it begins to call their soul, you know, it begins to give that child his or her identity.
Really?
Sure, because the child hears, the fetus hears everything that you say.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Connects with the voice.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We have to be going. We will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. You want a copy of today's program, you call 212-757-4488. Back with you tomorrow, my friends.
WBAI, New York.
Do you need a job? The YWCA of New York City's Center for Workforce Development is offering a free 8-week program for women to get prepared for some of today's demanding skills. Get training in Microsoft Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, resume writing, interviewing techniques, and professional presentation. To qualify, you must be 21 years of age, have a high school diploma or GED, be a U.S. citizen, or have a work permit. For more information, please call 212-735-9795 or email reentry@ywcanyc.org. Empower yourself.
In accordance with the Pacifica bylaws, six members of the National Board proposed an amendment adjusting the timetable for electing delegates to local station boards in 2006. The Pacifica Board must now vote on this amendment at its September 25 meeting in Houston. If approved, the local station boards must then vote on the amendment the following week. The amendment makes these changes. The record date, or date by which listeners are deemed eligible to vote, is moved forward 2 weeks from August 30 to August 16. The filing deadline for candidates for the local station boards is moved forward 1 month, from September 25 to August 25. And finally, the date by which ballots must be mailed out to listener sponsors is moved forward from October 15 to September 30. In effect, these amendments shorten the length of time to nominate candidates, but they extend the time to prepare, mail, and return ballots to you, the listeners. For further information on this amendment, see www.pacifica.org or www.wpfw.org.
We have done it. With your support, we have surpassed the fundraising goals of our summer membership drive. On behalf of Interim General Manager Indra Hardat, the staff and volunteers, we thank all of you. Now, we ask that you
please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.